This is Toby Sumter with your CrossPolitik Daily News Brief for Tuesday, July 21st, 2020. Today you will hear about the revenge of the soccer moms in Portland, Oregon. Historic flooding threatens the world's largest hydroelectric dam in, you guessed it, China. And we skim read a fascinating opinion piece by Niall Ferguson, who says we have entered Cold War II with, oh yeah, you guessed it, China. First up, the revenge of the soccer moms. USA Today reports a group of protesters in Portland, Oregon formed a wall of moms during demonstrations over the weekend as the city saw tensions rise after weeks of unrest that has led to the presence of federal authorities. The women formed a human shield dubbed the Wall of Moms at the front of a protest outside a Planned Parenthood. A federal courthouse. On Sunday, videos on social media showed the group chanting, "Moms are here, feds stay clear, and leave our kids alone." That's basically that's the motto of America now, isn't it? Moms are here, feds stay clear. Okay. Portland has seen nightly unrest since the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis on Memorial Day. Sunday marked the 52nd night in a row there have been protests in Portland, and the sixth night on which federal officers used tear gas attempting to disperse the crowds. In Portland, federal agents from the U.S. Marshals Special Operations Group and an elite U.S. Customs and Border Protection team based on the U.S.-Mexican border were deployed to aid law enforcement and protect federal property by an executive order of President Trump. This is in response to the destruction of the federal monuments and statues and so forth. Oregon Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum filed a lawsuit accusing the agents, the federal agents, of violating the civil rights of residents by using unlawful tactics. Bev Barnum, age 35, told BuzzFeed News she organized the protest dubbed the Wall of Moms after seeing the videos of federal authorities' actions. "We are about protecting peaceful citizens' right to protest," Barnum said. "We wanted to look like we were going to Target, like normal people." Video showed dozens of white women standing in front of the crowd Saturday night. Videos from the mom protest Sunday showed the group peacefully chanting and locking arms. Later in the night, photos and videos showed that officers used tear gas to disperse the crowds. I wonder if anything else happened, or was it just peaceful moms that got tear gassed? I don't know. Let's see what happens. Mayor Ted Wheeler criticized the presence of the federal officers, saying on CNN that they are not wanted here. We haven't asked them here. In fact, we want them to leave. President Donald Trump defended the use of the agents and decried the protests. "We're trying to help Portland, not hurt it," Trump tweeted Sunday. "Their leadership has for months lost control of the anarchists and agitators. They are missing in action. We must protect federal property and our people," all caps. "These were not merely protesters. These are the real deal," exclamation point. Acting Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf blasted the protesters as lawless anarchists during a visit to the city Thursday. Governor Kate Brown demanded that all federal law enforcement officers be removed from Portland streets and accused Wolf of putting Oregon citizens and law enforcement officers in danger. "This political theater from President Trump has nothing to do with public safety," Brown said in a tweet. "The president is failing to lead this nation. Now he is deploying federal officers to patrol the streets of Portland in a blatant abuse of power by the federal government." Meanwhile, abortion clinics slaughter babies by the thousands every single day. What would be wonderful right now would be some courageous Christian governor to announce that abortion is now legal in their state and order state troopers to close down all Planned Parenthoods and abortion clinics in the state. If they really want to play with the narrative, they should do it in the name and in the honor of George Floyd, pointing out that black babies are disproportionately targeted by abortion and they too are having their necks crushed at alarming rates in their mother's wombs. How about a wall of moms standing in front of an abortion clinic protecting babies? No doubt the liberals would freak out and demand the feds be sent in post-haste. I want to remind you that our first annual Fight Laugh Feast conference is coming up in Nashville, Tennessee, October 1st through the 3rd. Please join us. We'd love to meet you. We put together a package that is full of feasting and psalm singing, hearty fellowship, and a lineup of speakers committed to showing you how God's word applies to politics, economics, business, education, creativity, marriage and family, and much more. Please join us this October 1st to the 3rd. Sign up now because we want to build a rowdy Christian culture for God's glory and our good, and we want you in on it. Go to fightlaughfeast.com and register today. Historic flooding in China threatens the world's largest hydroelectric dam. Right, what's next? Parts of China is literally up to its eyeballs in water. This is from Forbes. And what the Chinese government is calling a once-in-a-100-years flood. The Three Gorges Dam, built to stop these things, is now in the spotlight. You know, when people build things to stop things, yeah, you know. The Three Gorges Dam is the world's largest hydroelectric power station with an installed capacity of 22,500 megawatts of power generation. The thing is that the power station is down the Yangtze River from a handful of other dams that exist at a higher elevation than the Three Gorges. And because of the floods and problems at those dams upstream, Three Gorges is buckling under the strain of massive flows of water. Cities in the country's central region along the Yangtze River, China's longest river, have been flooded in the past week due to heavy rains this monsoon season. It was reported to be the worst flood since 1998, not even 100 years. All told, more than 400 Yangtze tributary rivers have overflowed, with nearly 200 people dead and properties underwater. Average rainfall is around 12% higher than last monsoon season. The economic damage from flooding is expected to reach $1,200 billion in American dollars, according to some government estimates made on Friday. On Sunday, the Associated Press reported from Beijing that authorities blasted down an entire dam in order to release surging waters behind it and let it run. State broadcaster CCTV reported the dam on the Chui River in Anhui province was blown to bits. I'm glad they said blown to bits, with explosives early Sunday morning, after which the water level was expected to drop by 2 feet. Last week, the Three Gorges Dam opened 3 floodgates as the water level behind it rose more than 50 feet above the flood zone. Another flood crest is expected to arrive at the dam on Tuesday, the Associated Press article states, adding that China's military has been testing the strength of embankments and shoring them up with sandbags and rocks. That's great. Could God be trying to tell us something? This is also a good picture of what our efforts are like to thwart God's judgments. What do we have? Sandbags and rocks? Heh, somebody should read Exodus. Good luck with that. Last up, Niall Ferguson says we have entered Cold War II with China. Niall Ferguson's writing in the Bloomberg, it's an opinion piece, "We are in the foothills of a Cold War." Those were the words of Henry Kissinger when I interviewed him at the Bloomberg New Economy Forum in Beijing last November. The observation in itself was not wholly startling, and it seemed obvious to me since early last year that a new Cold War between the U.S. and China had begun. What had started out in early 2018 as a trade war over tariffs and intellectual property theft had by the end of the year metamorphosized into a technology war over the global dominance of the Chinese company, Huawei Technologies Company, in 5G network telecommunications. Then, an ideological confrontation in response to Beijing's treatment of the Uyghur minority in China's Xinjiang region and the pro-democracy protesters in Hong Kong, and an escalation of old frictions over Taiwan and the South China Sea. We might as well add to his list the crackdown on the Christians in mainland China last year and last couple of years, including Early Rain Covenant Church and Pastor Wang Yi, sentenced to 9 years in prison last December. So we got all this stuff going on. Ferguson continues, "Nevertheless, for Kissinger, of all people, to acknowledge that we were in the opening phase of Cold War II was remarkable. Since his first secret visit to Beijing in 1971, Kissinger has been the master builder of that policy of U.S.-Chinese engagement, which for 45 years was a leitmotif of U.S. foreign policy. It fundamentally altered the balance of power at the midpoint of the Cold War to the disadvantage of the Soviet Union. It created the geopolitical conditions for China's Industrial Revolution, the biggest and fastest in history. And it led, after China's accession to the World Trade Organization, to that extraordinary financial symbiosis which Moritz Schularik and I, speaking of Ferguson, christened Chimerica in 2007. So that's the name they gave to this massive global growth of China over the last 45 years, masterminded by Kissinger. They called it Chimerica. Well, how did relations between Beijing and Washington sour so quickly that even Kissinger now speaks of Cold War? The conventional answer to that question is that President Donald Trump has swung like a wrecking ball into the liberal international order, and that Cold War II is only one of the adverse consequences of his America First strategy. Yet, that view attaches too much importance to the change in U.S. foreign policy since 2016, and not enough to the change in Chinese foreign policy that came 4 years earlier, when Xi Jinping became General Secretary of the Chinese Communist Party. Future historians will discern that the decline and fall of Chimerica began in the wake of the global financial crisis, as a new Chinese leader drew the conclusion that there was no longer any need to hide the light of China's ambition under the bushel that Deng Xiaoping had famously recommended. The COVID-19 pandemic has done more than intensify Cold War II. It has revealed its existence to those who last year doubted it. The Chinese Communist Party caused this disaster, first by covering up how dangerous the new virus, SARS-CoV-2, was, then by delaying the measures that might have prevented its worldwide spread. Yet now China wants to claim that the U.S. is somehow behind the recurrent waves of pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong. The current confrontation over the former British colony's status is unambiguously made in China. As Pompeo has said, the new national security law Beijing imposed on Hong Kong last Tuesday effectively destroys the territory's semi-autonomy and tears up the 1984 Sino-British Joint Declaration, which guaranteed that Hong Kong would retain its own legal system for 50 years after its handover to People's Republic in 1997. Ferguson continues, "I have argued that this new Cold War is both inevitable and desirable, not least because it has jolted the U.S. out of complacency and into an earnest effort not to be surpassed by China in artificial intelligence, quantum computing, and other strategically crucial technologies. Yet there remains in academia especially significant resistance to my view that we should stop worrying and learn to love Cold War II. The establishment of a productive and predictable U.S.-China relationship," wrote John Lipsky, formerly of the International Monetary Fund, "is a sine qua non for strengthening the institutions of global governance." This sounds eminently reasonable, apart from one thing. The Chinese Communist government isn't interested in being frenemies. They know full well that this is a Cold War, because they started it. "When I first began talking publicly about Cold War II at conferences last year," Ferguson writes, "I was surprised that no Chinese delegates contradicted me. In September, I asked one of them, the Chinese head of a major international institution, why that was. 'Because I agree with you,' he replied with a smile. 'As a visiting professor at Tsinghua University in Beijing, I have seen for myself the ideological turning of the tide under Xi. Academics who study taboo subjects such as the Cultural Revolution find themselves subject to investigations, or worse. Those who take a more combative stance toward the West get promoted.' Yan Zutong, dean of the Institute of International Relations at Tsinghua, recently argued that Cold War II, unlike Cold War I, will be purely technological competition without proxy wars and nuclear brinkmanship. Yao Yang, dean of the National School of Development at Peking University, was equally candid in an interview with the Beijing Cultural Review published on April 28th. 'To a certain degree, we already find ourselves in the situation of a new Cold War,' he said. 'There are two basic reasons for this. The first is the need for Western politicians to play the blame game about the origins of the pandemic. The next thing,' he added, "is that now Westerners want to make this into a systems question, saying that the reason that China could carry out such drastic control measures in Hubei province is because China is not a democratic society, and this is where the power and capacity to do this come from. This, however, is weak beer compared with the hard stuff regularly served up on Twitter by the pack leader of the Wolf Warrior diplomats, Zhao Lijian. The Hong Kong Autonomy Act passed by the U.S. Senate is nothing but a piece of scrap paper,' he tweeted on Monday, in response to the congressional retaliation against China's new Hong Kong security law. By his standards, this was understatement. The tone of the official Chinese communique released after Pompeo's June 17 meeting in Hawaii with Yang Jiechi, the director of the Communist Party's Office of Foreign Affairs, was vintage Cold War. On the persecution of the Uyghurs, for example, it called on the U.S. side to respect China's counterterrorism and de-radicalization efforts, stop applying double standards on counterterrorism issues, and stop using Xinjiang-related issues as a pretext to interfere in China's internal affairs. But Ferguson says, "What has done the most to educate me about China and how China views America and the world today is not a political text, but a work of science fiction." The Dark Forest was Liu Cixin's 2008 sequel to the hugely successful Three-Body Problem. The Dark Forest, which continues the story of the invasion of Earth by the ruthless and technologically superior Trisolarans, introduces Liu's three axioms of cosmic sociology. First, survival is the primary need of civilization. Second, civilization continuously grows and expands, but the total matter in the universe remains constant. Third, chains of suspicion and the risk of a technological explosion in another civilization mean that in space, there can only be the law of the jungle. In other words, the words of the book's hero, the universe is a dark forest. Every civilization is an armed hunter stalking through the trees like a ghost, trying to tread without sound. The hunter has to be careful because everywhere in the forest are stealthy hunters like him. If he finds other life, another hunter, an angel or a demon, a delicate infant or a tottering old man, a fairy or a demigod, there's only one thing he can do: open fire and eliminate them. In this forest, hell is other people. Any life that exposes its own existence will be swiftly wiped out. Ferguson concludes, this is intergalactic Darwinism. So how do you fight committed Darwinists, people who truly believe that survival of the fittest is the only way? Whether we are talking about China or Antifa in Portland or Seattle, it's the same question. Let me offer just a very short answer for today. What overcomes this chaos is the beauty of the gospel. And what I mean is the beauty of the gospel lived out. This is the grace of forgiveness. Forgiving the unforgivable. Forgiving your mom, your dad, your son, your daughter, your brother, your sister. This is the beauty of the hearts of children turned to their fathers and the hearts of fathers turned to their children. The beauty of broken marriages healed. Darwinism cannot survive against a Christian culture of beauty and forgiveness because Darwin cannot account for the immaterial. Darwin cannot account for joy, for laughter, for meaning, for beauty, for grace. This is Toby Sumter with CrossPolitik News. You can find this in all our shows at crosspolitik.com or on our app, which you can download at your favorite app store. Just search Fight, Laugh, Feast. Support Rowdy Christian Media and become a Fight, Laugh, Feast club member. And for a limited time, you can get your very own Fight, Laugh, Feast t-shirt and access to tons of extended discussions with friends like Sho Baraka and David French, Eric Erickson, Maj Touré, Biblical Parenting with Doug and Nancy Wilson, God and Government and End Times Eschatology with Gary DeMar, Pastors and Politics of George Grant and C.R. Wiley, and much more. You also get $100 off your registration for our first annual Fight Laugh Feast conference. You just have to email Gabe and get that discount code. Plug it in, get $100 off. We'll see you in Nashville October 1st to the 3rd. Go to fightlaughfeast.com and register now. And have a great day.